It's another week, and I'm so happy to hear from y'all, to speak with y'all, speak to y'all. I'm so excited about this week's episode, but I'm also going to take a moment and let y'all know this week's episode will contain a lot. It's going to be a little heavy because it's also a two-part series, and this is just part one. So I'm letting you know with this episode, this is a trigger warning. There will be sexual abuse, discussion of incest, discussions of emotional and mental abuse. So if this will be triggering for you, I will say take caution. It is a heavy topic, and while we're delving into it, and I, you know, provide context and, you know, just for the sake of conversation, I do not want to cause harm to your mental and emotional being. So if topics or a topic like this will be a huge trigger for you, please ease forward as gently as you can, or you could just skip this episode entirely. It's all up to you. Either way, I really hope y'all enjoy it. Time for a cup of honest tea.
Like a boss, miss me with the shit. Now I flex with a cows. You a heartbreak killer, must hurt to see me floss. You got your wish, got a faithful nigga.
Now that y'all back, I am happy to have y'all back with me. I was going back and forth about this topic for a minute. I sat with King. We were going back and forth, exchanging ideas and, you know, having conversation about this topic itself. Well, actually, I had the idea to discuss another topic in relation to today's topic. However, King suggested watching this movie called Strange Things About the Johnsons. And if you have not seen this short film, you should, but don't if you're one, gonna be triggered. And two, it's extremely uncomfortable to watch, but I feel like you have to watch it, right? So in coming to conclusion, and even after watching that movie, I was like, okay, I need to make this topic a two-part series. And the first part, we're going to delve into the movie and discuss certain points, you know, that brings to question things we need to be having conversation about. Because like I said, we have honest tea all here every day, every week of the year. We're going to be doing honest tea, okay? So this is where we start. If you've never seen Strange Things About the Johnsons, it's basically a short film about a black family, you know, father, mother, son, eventually son's wife because he does get married. However, within this family, the son sexually assaults his dad or abuses his dad. The mom does know, you know, she figured it out or kind of like happened to pop up on her husband and her son, you know, on the wedding day. Granted, the dad really wasn't into it. You could tell that he was being forced. She saw them, never said anything, moved on with life. But you could tell that, you know, things were just not the same because the dad continued to be abused by the son. The wife of the son is none the wiser. Eventually, the father writes, because he's an author, he writes a book about his experience being assaulted by his son. And he titles this The Cocoon Man. And he details everything because, again, he has not verbally come out to his wife, so he's assuming his wife doesn't know. Writes this entire book or this script, then leaves it on the bed while his wife was taking a shower. And the son, not being able to use his bathroom, wanted to use the bathroom where his mom was, and went into the room, found the script, and confronts his dad. That turns into a whole big deal. Eventually, at the end, dad ends up committing suicide, or I think he committed suicide, to be honest. He runs out the house and ran in front of a moving vehicle while holding a second copy of the script that he had tightly to his chest. Now, You're probably thinking, his son? Yeah, his son. Now, I'm going to be completely frank. At the beginning of the movie, where it shows the son masturbating and the father busts into the room, catches him, but steps back outside, you know, and then the father proceeds to come back knocking gently and, you know, eventually sitting on the bed and having the conversation with him that it's okay to masturbate, that, you know, it's okay. It makes me wonder about the dynamic of their relationship. It makes me wonder about, you know, other things that are about to come up. And when I take the entire movie into consideration down to the casting, I feel like they were intentional with casting an all-black family. I did do my research, and the person who, you know, produced this, that created this film, basically said he casted the black guy who played the son because he knew him from other films. And, you know, they figured, why not just make it an all-black family? Granted, color or race didn't play an important part, but they also understood that, you know, in doing so, there might be a little, you know, a few feathers that will be ruffled once they went live with this short film. And I understand why they decided to go with the black family. Because if you think about it, when black men are sexually assaulted, like, how do people react, right, when they find out? Think about these celebrities who now find fame and power and the courage to come out and say, especially black men, or those who identify as black men, come out and say that they were sexually assaulted. How does the public usually react? They're just like, oh my God, wow, I'm sorry that happened to you. But they're not as deeply, you know, sympathetic or empathetic towards black men. And if you think about it, I feel like it's also because black men, in some sense, depending on what culture you're in, you look at black men as like this figure of strength, right? So you're thinking, he'll be okay. It's just a little abuse. He'll be all right. Like, you just brush it off. And when you look at it, though, when how black men react to being sexually assaulted, it's kind of different. It's almost like, it's, as you can see in the movie, the father's demeanor changed. He went from like this bubbly man to this indifferent, sad, isolated man. And being a black man in the community, it's almost like the expectation is like, once you experience some trauma or some abuse, is that you should just like get over it and deal with it and move on, because there are people who are depending on you. There are people who, you know, who need you to show for support. Or maybe you just don't have the emotional capacity to talk about it or to reach out for help. You don't even have the resources to do so. Either way, it then made me think of, you know, the idea behind children abusing their parents. And if you think about it in the black community, though, like, we're always like, yo, if our kids speak bad to us or try anything, we'll whoop their ass, right? We're quick to just discipline and whoop the shit out of them to make sure they stay in line. Whereas in this household, you're thinking, that was not even the case. Like, son had all the power. And you have to think about dynamics when you think of children, the taboo of children abusing their parents. You have to think about, what's the dynamic between the guardian and child? Like, I was given the example of, okay, so what if, you know, a guardian reaches out to a child and, you know, via text or phone calls or whatever, trying to reach them and they're ignoring them, would you consider that abuse? And I'm like, no, because it depends on, again, the dynamic. Is this an all healthy relationship? Is this guardian crossing a boundary? You know, are they showing up in a toxic way that affects said child? Therefore, child has to now isolate or remove themselves from that connection or speaking with that parent. I remember for a while, I was anxious in answering my mother's phone calls. I unpacked that in therapy, but there was a lot of anxiety in just seeing her name pop up on my phone. I would think something is wrong. There's a problem. Somebody's dead. Somebody's dying. Maybe she's sick. And other personal reasons where I would see her name pop up and immediately get anxious. And I had to unpack the dynamics of my relationship with my mom in order to come to a place of like, okay, she calls, I could answer without feeling like the floor is going to be pulled out from under me. So you have to consider the dynamics between guardian and child when considering abuse, a child abusing their guardian in the way of like communication. Then you also have to understand intentionality. Is the child being intentional with the shit that they're doing? If they're being intentional, yes. I feel like if there is ulterior motive or intentionality behind the action that they're causing the parents, yes. But sometimes children or even the child could be unaware of their own harmful behavior simply because whatever behavior they have has been normalized so much that they don't even see it as a problem. So I say all that to say, to be honest, this movie is loaded, and we are going to unpack as much as we can. I don't want to like stretch it out too much because I know it's a cup of tea, not a whole meal. So so we're just going to try to delve into it as slowly as possible. And I really want to start with relationship between the father and the son in this movie. That is the first part where I'm going to start off. At the beginning of the movie, you could simply tell the relationship between the dad and the son was clean. From the father's perspective, healthy. Because, you know, the dad took his time to come sit on his bed, talk to him about sex and masturbation. So obviously the dynamic there is this is a healthy father-son relationship, right? But what threw me off, and this might be my own prejudice or, you know, something I need to like discuss in my therapy session and unpack, is seeing the physical affection between father and son. There's a part in the movie where after they finish discussing, you know, masturbation, dad kind of like took his finger and rubbed it at the side of the son's face. And that movement and this, that notion, that action just like left me uneasy. So again, it's almost like not being able to see good or healthy father-son physical affection made me question that little thing. That little thing made me so uneasy. And I'm like, okay, it's a healthy dynamic where, you know, you're able to do that with your son. I've seen dads like kiss their son's foreheads and cheeks, hug them, you know, hold hands. But just that small finger on the cheek swipe, like, I immediately attach that to intimacy with, you know, a partner. But between a father and son, I'd be like, I don't think so. I don't know. Either way, it brings me down to right before that happened, they had an open and honest, well, what I would think would have been great would have been an open and honest communication and understanding of masturbation. Because while the dad was talking about, you know, hey, masturbation, everybody does it, the son asked him, well, do you do it? And the dad is like, well, everybody does it, right? But the son asked him again, but do you do it? It's not until the father walks out of the room do we notice that the picture this young man was masturbating to was a picture of his dad. So it brings me to question, was he asking, does everybody masturbate? Or was he really asking, does everybody masturbate to a picture of their dad? Because then if that is the question, dad's reaction to the masturbation and the conversation where he was not clear. He didn't even say the word masturbation. He was just saying, everybody does it. If he was clear to say, hey, everybody masturbates, it's normal, I think he would have cleared it up for the son and left little to no room for him to think anything otherwise. Because now on the other side of it, the son is probably thinking, dad just said, everybody masturbates to a picture of their parent or their guardian. It's okay. This feeling, this sexual feeling that I have towards my dad is perfectly normal. You see how creepy that is when there is no honest and open communication between guardian and child. Like, guardian, you need to be clear. Cut clear. Use the words. I know it's going to be awkward. It's going to be weird talking about sex. I spoke about this, you know, in my one of my episodes where I was talking about the differences in culture in terms of how we discuss sex. In Jamaica, we don't give a shit. We be talking about sex all the time. It's in music. It's in food. It's in everything. Okay? Whereas I seen other cultures, it's like you're tiptoeing and pussyfooting around sex and masturbation and all these other things, when if you just open the door to have the conversation with it, it would not be taboo. It would not be awkward. And you know what? Maybe, and just maybe, we would all just be a little bit more secure with ourselves and our sexuality. Just saying. But yeah, if dad at that moment were just clear and honest about what was happening, you know, walking in on the masturbation scene, I think a lot of things could have been avoided. That's my personal opinion. I could be wrong, but that's just my personal opinion. Because even when he was leaving the room, you know, the son said, "I love you." And dad said, "I love you back," right? Again, looking at it from the previous conversation of them talking about masturbation and quote-unquote everybody does it, think about it. The son is probably thinking, "I love you," in terms of the sexual, unhealthy version of love that he's currently experiencing with his dad. Whereas from the dad's perspective, dad is probably thinking, I'm saying love you to my son. He's not thinking unhealthy. He's thinking healthy father-son dynamic, healthy father-son relationship. So I don't know. Like, but this dynamic between guardian and child, I feel like in order for a healthy and honest relationship to flourish, we need to be open with each other. And in order to do so, you know, we kind of can't fear being open. We can't think about, well, what would happen if I don't? Like, have the conversation. Everybody masturbates. Yes, everybody masturbates. I'm sure there are people out there, "Oh, I'm a virgin." I'm sure you've touched yourself a few times, though. I'm sure you can't be a 30-year-old virgin who has never masturbated. That's a unicorn. This brings me to the character of the father, right? And his development throughout the whole movie. Because at the beginning of the movie, he's open, he's honest, he's laughing, he's talking, smiling. And then move forward to the wedding day, he's sad, he's indifferent, right? And it's like, did anyone not notice the change in his demeanor? How he went from being so happy to not being present? Like, it makes me question, are we paying attention to the people who are in our lives? Are we really in, how are we paying attention when we interact with others? Because here's this man, right? Let's think about it. Cut to the bathroom scene. If you've seen this movie, this scene is very traumatic. So if you decide to watch this movie and you see him laying in the tub listening to music, what was gonna happen next is pretty traumatizing. So he's listened to a self-help book, I guess, or an audio, as you could tell, because they make you listen to a little bit of it. You could tell by him listening to this that he's probably stuck in a state of being a victim. Like, his mental state at that point is just like, he needs encouragement. He needs courage, you know, to live his best life. Like, you could tell that's the place he's in based on just a few words that emanate from the headphones. And while he's in the bathtub taking his little bath, you know, living his best life and chillaxing, the son, being unable to come into the bathroom, kicks the door down, and it flashes to the mom being in the bedroom, hears the commotion, and instead of investigating, she turns the volume up, and then it flashes back to the bathroom where son is stepping out of the tub with his pants and his ankles, pulling it up, and dad's hands gripping the side of the bathtub tightly. So we could assume what happened. Now, after that happened, he laid on the bed next to his wife with his sheet all the way up to his chin in fear. And then he looked to his wife, and then it panned over to show the wife sleeping with her back towards him with her eyes wide open. Now, here's a black man who is not only stuck in victimhood. He is stuck in his trauma, right? Silenced out of fear and shame. And folks may even ask or quick to suggest his culpability in the matter, right? But you're not taken into calculation his mental state. When you are a victim of trauma, you're stuck. You feel stuck. Because if he shares his experience, which, by the way, involves his son and his only son, people will then question, well, this is your son. How could this happen? Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? Blah, 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 blah. But if he tells his wife, then he brings shame and this and that and all the other stuff. Either way, you are often silenced by your own emotional experience, especially traumatic experience. And it begs me to even question, like, do we pay attention to people in our lives when we interact with them? Are we paying attention to them? You know, when we ask them if they're okay, are they really okay? Because there are many instances where we see this man in like a joyous setting or family gathering, and he's sitting by himself, secluded, isolated, just like real sad. But no one is paying attention to him. And it makes me even think of when people even suggest his culpabilities, it's like when people look at other sexual assault victims and ask, well, why didn't you say anything? Why didn't you come forward? Why didn't you fight back? In this case, you can't really shame him for not saying anything. But at the same time, you're questioning, aside from the fact that he's your son and you're fearful of what might happen to your son, and you're also ashamed because, you know, you have a wife, a whole wife over here, you know, who you think doesn't know, who, by the way, does know. Like, how do you get through that? And his cry for help in that moment was to write, which was also his form of therapy, if you think about it. Because he's a writer. He's an author. So he goes and he writes a book called The Cocoon Man, or a script. And he leaves it for his wife to read, like I said before. Son found it, and boom, there's a problem. Again, it's like no one is paying attention to the relationship between this father-son duo. And it makes me wonder, are they not paying attention or are they just ignoring? Because even when they're at the dinner table, right? The son goes, Dad, I brought you beer. Dad's like, I don't want no beer. Well, he ain't say it like that, but you know, I ain't in the mood for beer. Well, I brought you beer. And mom goes, I would love some beer. Son goes, I ain't brought that shit for you. It's for Dad. It's his. He's going to have to give it to you, basically. I'm paraphrasing, by the way. That's not how they talk. And Dad then turns around, grabs the hand of his wife and goes, would you like some beer? And she said, yeah, later. I'll have some later. And right there, they're having a nice little sweet moment right in front of the sun. And his entire demeanor changes. The fact is, you have two wives and two husbands at that table. The fact he was so unnecessarily aggressive towards his mother, and slightly jealous when his mother and his father showed intimacy and affection towards each other, immediately made me think of the Oedipus complex. Granted, the Oedipus complex, if you've never heard of it, thank you to Freud and his psychosexual stages of development. The Oedipus complex usually happens during the phallic stage of development, which is like between 3 and 6, where the libido, as Freud would say, the life force, is concentrated in the genital area of the child's body, right? And during this stage, the child will experience an unconscious feeling of desire for their opposite sex parents. Kind of like when you see father-daughter, son-mothers, the closest mother of them. And the child would be like very jealous or envious towards the same-sex parent. And this unhealthy love for the father by the son, like, manifests into this, like, this whole sexual escapade with him, and this sexual assault with him, to the point that when the dad tries to free himself, that his own son gaslit him, right? And I think that scene really, it kind of like tug at me a little bit because I remember when I was assaulted, I remember I remember the perpetrator because, they had to drive me home. And he basically was like, "You're the reason why I did this. Like, why do you have to look like that? Why do you have to be so beautiful?" Nigga, what? So it's like this whole victim shaming and gaslighting of the victim to make them feel bad because they're in the process of wanting to free themselves is kind of fucked up. Because then, even when you consider how the wife reacted, the wife ignored him, pretending she ain't no shit. And how many times have people done that publicly? How many times have you seen victims know of their trauma? Not even if they didn't tell you, but you know of their trauma and you blatantly ignore it. You blatant because you know what? No, we're not gonna touch that. It's a tricky subject. It's a soft subject. We're not gonna talk about it. Let's move on. We're gonna pretend nothing's happening. In this case, you can't pretend a son is not assaulting his dad. And it also brings back to the taboo where folks fail to acknowledge that men can be victims too. I've read where men who have been sexually assaulted become, folks themselves where they traumatize black women, whether that's through physical or sexual abuse themselves. I read where, or even the thread of theories of men becoming overly sexualized or becoming womanizers after being assaulted at a young age by an older woman. And then it causes me to question the culture of the rap industry because I've seen or heard rappers go online, and some of them have boasted about losing their virginity to older women, not realizing they were sexually assaulted at the time. Like, whether you give consent under the legal age or not, it's still rape. You were not legal. You were sexually assaulted. We're not even going to talk about the secrets of all this. Like, the wife kept the secret the whole time. And this reminds me of when, back in the day, when I was younger, especially in the Caribbean culture and upbringing, like people are, well, in the family, they're quick to say, "Oh, don't say nothing. You're gonna shame the family, blah, blah, blah," while they're unable to literally face the problem and hold the perpetrators accountable for the bullshit that they do in the family. Because in my family, I've heard certain things happening to relatives and to people. And it's like continuously, you would then put the victims and their perpetrators in the same room under this guise of, it's family, we love each other, blah, 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 special occasion. But you've never addressed the issue. And now you put the victim and the perpetrator in the same room and repeatedly assaulting the victim over and over again, not just emotionally, but mentally. And it's like that makes people not want to trust their own family at that point. So at the end of the day, I'm looking at the wife like, "Bitch, I just want to fuck you up." Like, you knew this happened. You were fully aware and you have said nothing. And she reminds me of family members who knows when fuck shit is going on in a family, and they decide that, they just gonna keep quiet because they ain't trying to shame the family. People like y'all, I ain't gonna say nothing. Moving on, in the end, right, of this movie, after the father dies and they had the funeral night, I guess I'm saying, the son puts on the sweater of the dad while looking at a picture of him on the mirror. And at that point, I was like, this son is creepy. There's this idea of closeness that he wants to be with his dad. And you'll kind of think, does he want to be close to his dad because his dad is now passed, and his dad was a paramour, blah, blah, blah. But then King was like, what if it's more like a pleasure thing? Because he loved his dad so much that he wanted to be a part of his dad, right? He wanted to be inside his dad. Now, think about the line inside of. If you are dating somebody and, y'all having a little cute moment, and you're like, "Yo, I can't wait to be inside you," or whatever. Like, you get turned on. But in the son and the daddy's case, he loved his dad so much he wanted to be a part of his dad. It's like, that kind of love, again, is unhealthy. Why didn't anyone pick up on his mental illness at all this whole time? No one has picked up on his mental illness. Granted, at the end, his dad, you know, his mom killed him and all. And they had a whole fight because mom decides to confront him. I mean, kind of late now because daddy's dead, but confront him and eventually kills her son. And in this moment, not only did she just lose her son and her husband, now having to read this script, she has now lost every ounce of dignity she possibly might have had. Now, I'm going to ask this public. Y'all can answer me on Instagram if you want or send me a message. Now, imagine if the roles were reversed and this was a father and a daughter, right? And she's jealous and she's aggressive and, you know, stepping in when mommy would do certain things. Like, she never grows out of that Oedipus complex phase. Like, how would the public would react to that? What would be the outcome of that? Because I feel like it would have been hella different. Everything would be on a microscope. But because it were men, they were men, no one paid attention. No one gave a shit to notice. And it's really one of those short films that tackled one notion and one notion only for me, and that was that Black bodies, a lot of times, we don't have a choice over it, especially with the trauma that we suffer every day and the re-traumatization of those experiences in life. A lot of times, we don't have control, and the moment we do, our trauma has the best of us, and we react unhealthily. I said all that to say, to be honest, like, this entire movie made me realize that within the community, in sense, we need to be a little bit more open with our guardian-child relationships and have honest conversations of what may or may not be happening to their bodies as they grow up into adulthood, as well as what's happening in the family, you know? It also brings to light, you know, the connection of the closeness between guardians or, you know, husband and wife, like that level of secrecy and how it could break apart a family. And at the same time, and at the junction of it, of, you know, discussing what healthy love looks like and unpacking that and working through that. And like I said, this is really just part one of what I wanted to discuss. And I hope you are able to stick around for part two, because part two is not as heavy. You know, it's a little bit more enjoyable. It's not as heavy, but a little bit more enjoyable. And I hope to see you next week for this one. As usual, take what you need or want and leave what you don't. I love you. Mean it.